Morning. We're delighted to welcome you all to the courtroom. We want to have a special welcome to students who are here with the courtroom class program sponsored by the Supreme Court and the State Bar of Wisconsin. Would the Waukesha High School students please stand? Thank you for coming. You may be seated. The Conserve High School, please stand. And a welcome to you, and you may be seated. And we have Teach Homeschool students, would you please stand? And welcome to you all, and you may be seated. The students have, across the state, have been invited to join us for an oral argument. If the invitation is accepted, then the student group is provided with briefs of the case that they are to hear, and they may engage in various activities relating to the case. They come to court to listen to your oral arguments, counsel, and then we'll meet with a justice after the proceeding. The subject of the meeting with the justice is the procedure of the court in taking and deciding cases, not a discussion of the substantive issues of the case. Everyone is welcome to join the justice and the students for this discussion. Let me introduce the court to you all. On my far left is Justice Michael Gableman. Seated next to him is Justice Patience Wildensack. To my immediate left is Justice Patrick Crooks. I am Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice, and I will meet with the class immediately after the hearing of this case. To my right is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, and to her right, Justice David Prosser, and on the far right, Justice Annette Ziegler. With those introductions made, I will call our last case for the October arguments, 068P2662, Jonathan Wazowski versus Hastings Mutual Insurance Company. Representing Mr. Wazowski is Attorney Joel W. Broad. Mr. Broad, you may proceed. Pardon me? Good. Sorry, I mispronounced your name. Under any conditions, you may proceed.
Counsel. January 18th, 2004, Jonathan Wazowski suffered a brain injury.
I suggest you move the podium up so that the microphone is closer. Where's the button on this podium, please, counsel? There you go, you found it. Okay.
Okay, is that better?
I think so.
Much better. On January 18th of 2004, Jonathan Wazowski suffered a brain injury while a passenger in a Dodge Avenger that was owned by his father, Dennis Wazowski. The driver of that vehicle was underinsured. We settled our claims with the liability carrier for the driver of that underinsured motor vehicle, gave a void notice to Hastings Mutual Insurance Company, the underinsured motorist carrier, and made an underinsured motorist claim. Hastings Mutual filed a declaratory judgment action seeking to have the circuit judge, Duval, declare that there was no coverage under this business auto coverage policy on the basis that one insured must occupy a covered auto in order to be covered under the underinsured motorist language. Oral arguments, Judge Duval indicated that he was bound by the following of Crandall versus Society Insurance Company, indicated that plaintiff's arguments were valid, that a reasonable insured could interpret the policy the way we interpreted the policy, but he was bound by Crandall, and made, I think, somewhat of an offhand comment that if the Court of Appeals determined that he was wrong about that, he wouldn't have too many problems. Of course, the Court of Appeals, as we've learned in this case, is not does not have the authority to overrule their own decisions. We appealed to the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals determined that we had persuasively, if not conclusively, established coverage under the Hastings UIM policy, but was bound under the, I think it's Cook versus Cook decision, bound by the holding of Crandall. The Court of Appeals determined that this was a significant enough issue that they certified it to this court to either clarify or overrule the decision in Crandall. This court denied certification last October. Court of Appeals issued a subsequent per curiam decision, again indicating that we had persuasively, if not conclusively, established UIM coverage, determined that they were bound to follow Crandall, and invited us to petition for review, which we did, which this court accepted on review. Crandall should be overturned. I don't say that lightly. Crandall should be overturned because it's an overbroad holding.
Well, let's take a look at Crandall. As I recall in your brief, you argued that it should be limited or modified. The amicus argued it should be overturned. Let's go on with the holding, and let's take a look at the holding of Crandall. What do you think is the holding of Crandall?
The holding in Crandall is that if you're not occupying a covered auto or you're not engaged in garage operations, there's no UIM coverage under these types of policies.
Mm-hmm. The holding in Crandall that I circled anyway, I might be wrong, is in paragraph 13 of the opinion. And the last couple of sentences in paragraph 13 read, here, and of course, here is a kind of a term of art. I use that loosely. That means here, under the facts here, right? Here, there is no UIM coverage unless an accident involves a covered auto, or the insured is engaged in garage operations at the time of the accident. Of course, we're not concerned with the garage operations focus here today. So here there is no UIM coverage unless an accident involves a covered auto. What is the here? What were the facts of Crandall? Can they be distinguished from the case here?
Well, clearly I think they can, Your Honor. I mean, the facts in Crandall were the party stipulated that they were not in a covered auto at the time. And that was part of the stipulated facts. What Crandall tried to argue was that because her father had a garage in the state of Wisconsin, that any time anybody was driving a vehicle, they were involved in garage operations. Clearly, the Court of Appeals said, no, wait a minute. If that were true, you'd always be involved in garage operations. What I think happened in Crandall, Justice Bradley, is that the court made a broad pronouncement rather than limiting its facts to here, limiting its holding to these facts. Crandall didn't pay a premium for any UIM coverage. Crandall insured a business, not an individual like Jonathan Lisowski. That's a critical distinction because if you are an individual named insured, a class one insured under the definitions of these policies is the named insured or any family member. If you insure a business, you can never be a class one insured.
Why is it important to be a class one insured?
Because a class one insured, Your Honor, determines who is an insured. And only insureds can recover under the underinsured motorist.
Doesn't class two insureds also determine who are insureds?
Sure. Class 2 insureds can recover as long as they're occupying a covered auto. But in Crandall, you had to be occupying a covered auto because you couldn't have any Class 1 insureds. The named insured was an entity. Therefore, there were no other family members that could be Class 1 insureds.
Explain for me again, you said it's a critical distinction between being a Class 1 insured and the facts in Crandall that the policy was issued to a business rather than to an individual, as is the case before us.
We have to look to the terms of the policy. The standard procedure is we first of all look to the coverage section of the policy, determine if coverage is triggered, determine if who are the insureds under the coverage clause, determine what the grant of coverage is, then review any exclusions to the policy to see if we're going to take away any of the coverage that's been given, and at the end of the term of the endorsement, if we're left with coverage, we have coverage. So who's an insured? Well, the insuring language says, we will pay all sums the insured.
Are you referring to the endorsement or the underlying policy?
The endorsement, at page 55 of plaintiff's appendix, Your Honor. The coverage, we will pay all sums the, quote, insured, close quote, is legally entitled to recover from the owner or driver of an, quote, underinsured motor vehicle, close quote. Skip down to B. Who is an insured? If the named insured is designated in the declarations as one, an individual, then the following are insureds. A, the named insured and any family members. That's referred to as a Class 1 insured. Class 2 would be anyone else occupying a covered auto. Class 3 would be anyone for damages he or she is entitled to recover because of bodily injury sustained by another insured. For instance, a consortium claim. Under insured definition 2, a partnership, limited liability company, corporation, or any other form, you're only an insured if you're A, occupying a covered auto under A, or anyone for damages he or she is entitled to recover because of bodily injury sustained by another insured. There are no family member insureds if you are listed as an entity in the named insured.
Counselor, as I look at page 55, the whole page begins with, for the covered auto. When you kind of hop over that, to me, that seems to be the central question. It sounds to me like you're asking for portable UIM coverage. So whatever kind of automobile this young man was in, or anybody else who happens to be a named insured, then they have coverage. So if he's riding in my car and he had the same accident, in your view, under this policy, would it be covered?
Justice Robichak, did the insurance company agree to pay all sums the insured is legally entitled to recover from the owner or driver of an underinsured motor vehicle?
It says at the very top, for a covered auto. And I'm asking, to me, that's the whole question. Either that has application and limits the policy, or it doesn't.
I don't think it limits the policy. I'll tell you why.
Okay.
For a covered auto is listed in the business auto coverage form under the liability section of the policy. If we read the liability section of...
It also is in the endorsement, page 55, right at the top.
Indeed. Indeed. But okay. Let's determine, first of all, what a covered auto is.
Okay. What page, counselor?
Well, first of all, on the deck page.
Okay. Gotcha.
It insures autos in the deck page. The deck page insures, it's a business auto policy. And so at page 19, it lists covered autos under category 07. And the category 07 was a Mack Tractor. Okay? When you get to the coverage sections of the various portions of the policy, page 24, under the liability coverage, Hastings Mutual said, quote, we will pay all sums the insured legally must pay as damages because of bodily injury or property damage to which this insurance applies caused by an accident and resulting from the ownership, maintenance, or use of a covered auto. the covered auto is part of the liability section of the policy. They're not going to provide liability coverage for Dennis Lasowski operating a Dodge Avenger. They're not going to provide liability coverage for Dennis Lasowski operating a Camaro. They're only going to provide liability coverage for people who cause injuries resulting from the ownership, maintenance, or use of a covered auto. When we get to the underinsured motorist endorsement, it says, this endorsement changes the policy. That's the first bold-headed language. This endorsement changes the policy. Please read it carefully. For a covered auto licensed or principally garaged or garage operations conducted in Wisconsin, this endorsement modifies insurance provided under the business auto coverage form. With respect to coverage provided by this endorsement, the provisions of the coverage form apply unless modified by the endorsement. The endorsement, Justice Rogan said, modified the requirement of the business auto coverage form that you had to occupy a covered auto. Nowhere in the grant of coverage in the UIM endorsement is there any requirement that you have to occupy a covered auto. In fact, this policy is the same as all of the policies that each of you have under your own vehicles. A standard UIM policy that Hastings Mutual took and slapped this language on the top and somehow now wants to import this occupancy requirement in a covered auto.
So essentially what you're asking us to conclude is that this is portable coverage. So it doesn't matter what kind of an automobile an insured is in, they have UIM coverage.
Portable is one of those buzzwords.
Okay, well, don't say it. Take that word out of it. I mean, as I said, if the young man were riding in my car and had the same awful accident, in your view, would this policy provide UIM coverage?
Yes, because this coverage is personal. UIM coverage insures injured insureds. It doesn't insure automobiles. UIM coverage is a promise to pay all sums an insured is legally entitled to recover from some other underinsured motorist. We insure people in this policy. The business auto coverage insures liability if you're operating a covered auto. The UIM endorsement is a standard UIM endorsement with this, I believe, contextually ambiguous introductory language that says, for a covered auto. And then it says, well, for a covered auto and the business auto coverage, this endorsement changes everything. Please read it carefully. We read it very carefully, and there's no requirement in here that you occupy a covered auto. In fact, why would you have three different types of insureds, class 1, class 2, and class 3, two of the classes of which are never required to occupy a covered auto in order to be an insured, if you had to occupy a covered, be in a covered auto to begin with?
What's the underinsured motor vehicle in this case?
The underinsured motor vehicle is the Dodge Avenger. Jonathan Lasowski's friend was driving the Dodge Avenger. He had permissive use to drive the Dodge Avenger. He caused this crash. Multiple people died in the crash. He was the underinsured motorist. The underinsured motor vehicle was the Dodge Avenger. We brought a claim against the driver of the underinsured motor vehicle. They pay their liability. We pursue our claim now pursuant to the grant of coverage that Hastings Mutual gave us. That is, they're going to pay all sums the insured, Jonathan Lasowski, Class 1 insured, that he's entitled to recover because of the negligence of the driver of an underinsured motor vehicle.
Well, that's under A1. That's what I think you're reading.
Right.
So is your position that A1 language, we, the insurance company, will pay all sum the insured is legally entitled to recover. Who's the insured?
Jonathan Lasowski, Your Honor.
Entitled to recover as compensatory damages from the owner or driver. Who's the owner?
The owner is Dennis Lasowski.
Father.
Yes.
Of an underinsured motor vehicle, and that's the father's thing. So I keep hearing you talk about that. So are you telling me that that sentence conflicts with the top sentence for a covered auto license or principally garaged?
Your Honor, I don't think the introductory sentence is at all part of the insurance.
No, but you know, if you're wrong, you better have another argument.
Well, my other argument is, first of all, prefatory phrases should never be used to determine the scope of coverage. Specific provisions in an endorsement govern over broad provisions of the general
coverage. So what's the specific provision?
The specific provision is the endorsement language.
Is it A1?
A1.
Okay.
A1.
You don't like my word conflict. You like supersede better.
Well, to conflict to me means that you've elevated both of them to the same status. Okay.
If you did, would they conflict?
Yes, totally. And totally, there would be, would there be a reasonable interpretation that you had to occupy a covered auto? Is that a reasonable interpretation, the way we would interpret this ambiguity, this contextual ambiguity?
Okay. What about C2 and exclusions? It says this insurance does not apply to the following: bodily injury sustained. We have bodily injury here, right?
That exclusion C2B, Your Honor?
C2A, C2B, any of them.
None of those exclusions apply.
Why not?
Well, first of all, exclusion A, we don't pay for bodily injury sustained by an individual named insured. The individual named insured was Dennis Laskowski, so Dennis Laskowski did not have injuries in this case. His son, Jonathan. So that deals with a named insured. Exclusion 2B, we don't pay for damages to any family member while occupying or when struck by any vehicle owned by that family member.
Not owned by him.
No.
Okay.
Jonathan didn't own it. Dennis owned it. C, we don't pay for any damages to any family member while occupying or when struck by any vehicle owned by the named insured, Dennis Laskowski, that is insured for underinsured motorist coverage on a primary basis under any other coverage form. The Dodge Avenger didn't have any UIM coverage. So none of the exclusions apply. Judge Duval found that. None of the exclusions apply. He found that Dennis Laskowski was the owner. He found that Jonathan was an insured. He found you're entitled to coverage, but this Crandall case is the gorilla in the room that we need to get around. And I think, Justice Bradley, that the holding in Crandall should have been limited to Dana Crandall, you're not an insured.
And why not?
Because your dad's business was the name of the insured. It was Crandall Auto Body. And under the definition of who's an insured, B2A and B, Dana Crandall is not an insured. She wasn't occupying a covered auto, and she's not entitled to recover damages for any other insured. That would have been the easy way to hold. That should have been the holding of the case.
Could I ask you, Mr. Broad, you say the UIM coverage is personal?
Personal.
And the policy for the Mack truck covered Jonathan as a family member.
The policy for the Mack truck under the liability portion of the business auto coverage form covered Jonathan if he was negligent in the use of the Mack truck. Under the UIM endorsement, the Mack truck isn't even referenced unless we have this introductory importing of the Ford covered auto into the coverage.
But the policy that was triggered by that Mack truck provided coverage for a family member, which you say is personal.
Yes.
What I'm trying to get at is that Jonathan bought a policy for the Avenger, which he was using. So long, under your theory, so long as a person is covered under any underinsured motorist coverage, the person would seem not to have any incentive to ever acquire that coverage under any other policy again.
I don't agree, Your Honor. Totally do not agree with that. There are, in 1995, the legislature passed the drive-by-the-car provisions. The drive-by-the-car provisions eliminated a lot of the personal and portable nature of underinsured motorist coverage. We still don't have the remedial purpose for underinsured motorist coverage, and that is to pay damages that are insufficient because of the liability limits. There are all kinds of ways in which you're not entitled to have portable UIM coverage. The exclusions. If Jonathan had insured the Dodge Avenger for underinsured motorist coverage, he has no coverage here. If his dad had insured the automobile for underinsured motorist coverage, he has no coverage here. He has the coverage that the insurance policy gave him, and he has the coverage that the insurance policy took away from him, and whatever coverage is left is what he has.
What I'm suggesting is that there is a disincentive for him to have UIM coverage under another policy because of the personal coverage you say exists.
I don't think so, Your Honor. If we could take a vote of the folks in the room here what underinsured motorist coverage means.
They're not going to take a vote.
No, I don't mean that. But my point is this. This court has determined that an insurance agent does not have a duty to explain underinsured motorist coverage to an insured. People do not understand what underinsured motorist coverage is. They certainly don't have disincentives, in my opinion, or incentives to go out and not buy coverage because they don't know what it is. I mean, we know what it is because we analyze these policies, we analyze contracts. But to say that, you know, if we decide the way you want to do, Mr. Broad here, that somehow that's going to give a disincentive to all people to get underinsured motorist coverage, I don't think that's true, Your Honor. People don't understand underinsured motorist coverage. Jonathan Lisowski and Dennis Lisowski didn't really have a clue about this language. They had nothing to do with this language. The insurance company understands. The insurance company made this adhesion contract. They're the ones that are supposed to draft it so it's clear, unambiguous. They're the folks that chose this language. If they wanted to exclude UIM coverage for anybody that was not occupying a covered auto, they should have put it right in the insuring language of coverage C1. And they should have added this language. We'll pay all the sums in insured, add the language, who is only occupying a covered auto, add that language, is legally entitled to recover. They didn't do that. This is a standard policy that would be no ambiguity whatsoever in any of the policies that you own, that I own. It's a standard language. But because they have this for a covered auto and then it changes the policy, they want to import that. And then we're stuck with that language because of, I believe, the overbroad holding of Crandall. We've got a circuit judge who determined that Crandall was improperly decided. The Runder Court of Appeals decided that Crandall was improperly decided. The Court of Appeals that decided Lisowski in this case determined that it was overbroad and should have been overturned. And the plain reading of the language triggers coverage for Jonathan Lisowski. If he had insured the Avenger, Justice Prosser, we wouldn't be here because that's an exclusion. But if Hastings Mutual really wanted to limit coverage only for occupants of covered auto, they should have said that rather than saying, well, Ford is covered auto. We did insure a Mack truck. We bought underinsured motorists. Coverage. That coverage is defined by pages 55 through 58 in plaintiff's appendix. That's the endorsement. The endorsement takes precedence over any other conflicting portions of the policy. They could easily have added the words. And we have other cases where this court has decided they could have easily added the words. I think Blazikovich was one where the insured wanted to add the words in a split limits of liability section of the policy. I'm talking with my red light on.
Hey, finish your sentence, counsel.
Hard facts make bad law. Crandall's bad law. It was an overbroad holding. should have been limited. If you're not an insured, you don't have coverage. Instead of this sweeping holding that you either have to occupy a covered auto or you have to be involved in garage operations, even Justice Bradley, if it says here, other courts, I believe, have determined that that means you have to, whether it's here or not here. That portion of the language should be stricken down. We've triggered coverage. A reasonable insured would interpret this coverage as holding coverage. There are no exclusions that apply. We paid for the coverage. We're insured. We're entitled to the coverage. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Bear, representing Hastings Mutual Insurance Company. Podium is the most difficult thing about appearing in this
court. That might be a personal opinion.
We won't debate it, counsel, right?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Your Honor, and rest of the court. A couple of things. Mr. Broda is essentially arguing that if the insured here would have not purchased coverage, then he would have coverage. And it just really doesn't make sense. Let me clarify a few things. First of all, the Hastings policy, just like the policy in Crandall, insures Dennis Lasowski, business, and it says right on the deck page, farming. If you look on paragraph 9 of the Crandall decision, it says this policy is issued to Jack Crandall, doing business as Crandall Auto Body. It's the same kind of a situation with regard to the policy. Now, when we look at...
Excuse me, counsel. The trial court made a finding... and made findings here. And the findings include that Dennis Lasowski was the owner of the Dodge Avenger.
That is correct, and he is a technical owner by virtue of the title only. All other aspects of ownership belong to the son, Jonathan, and that becomes important when you look at the intent of the parties.
Well, I thought that it was not disputed on appeal that this is an individual, a policy issued to an individual.
The policy is issued to, like the one in Crandall, is issued to an individual doing the business of farming. In Crandall, it was issued to an individual doing the business of a garage auto.
What is the declaration page?
The declaration
say?
Page is on page 29 of my appendix, and it says, if you look a little bit down, named insured business, farming.
What's the name on the deck page? Who's it issued to? Is it issued to a company? Is it issued to an individual? Who's it issued to on the deck
page? Issued to Dennis Lasowski, doing business as farming.
Let me just pull that deck page out. This is Dennis Lasowski. Yeah, that's what I recall. It's
under item 1.
Item 1, Dennis Lasowski. That's who it's issued to.
If you look just down below that, it says named insured business, farming.
Wouldn't have it said named of insured business judging if it were I?
Pardon me, Your Honor, I did not hear that.
If it were I who had this policy, wouldn't it said named of insured business, wouldn't it have said judging or dispensing justice? I think that's rhetorical, if I may. let's take a look at the deck page because that's what's important. Here you have, and what's important is whether or not it's issued to an individual or whether or not it is issued to a entity, such as a partnership, limited liability company, corporation, or any other form of organization.
And an individual who is a farmer, his business is farming. It may not have a separate entity as an LLC or corporation. We have thousands of farms, and I dare say most of them are just individual businesses.
Well, let's nail this down, because I think you're somewhere in between. Take a look at the endorsement.
Yes.
Okay. Now we look at who is an insured, right?
Well, first you have to figure out what's covered.
And that's not where my question is going, counsel. Who is an insured? Now, there are two categories of insured. Number one, well, let me read the whole thing. Who is an insured? If the named insured as is designated in the declarations as, number one, an individual, then the following are insureds. Set forth A, B, and C. Number two, a partnership, limited liability company, corporation, or any other form of organization, then the following are insureds. And they set forth things. My question to you is whether the named insured in this policy is designated as an individual, which would come under sub one, or as an entity such as a partnership, limited liability company, or corporation, which would come under sub two.
To the extent that insurance would inure to a covered vehicle, it would be under number one.
So the named insured here is an individual. Is that because analytically there's a different analysis?
Assuming that there's a covered vehicle, there would be an insured. In this case, there's not a covered vehicle.
Okay. If there were a covered vehicle, the policy is issued to an individual. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
As an insured or an individual, I would look to the policy to determine what my status was. If I buy a car, I'm going to look to the policy and say, oh, this is a newly acquired vehicle after this policy was issued. And I would look to section one of the policy covered autos, and I would turn over to the next page, section B, page 34 of my appendix. And I would see that if symbol seven is by my vehicle, then I would know that I have to insure the Dodge Avenger before I could have any coverage under this policy for anything involving that vehicle. I would know that, and I would have to tell the insurance company that so that a premium could be paid if necessary, and that we could be fair to all parties involved here.
Mr. Fair?
Yes.
If Mr. Lisowski had bargained such as to obtain a 1 or a 2 in the spot where there's a 7, would there be any question that the policy, therefore, would provide coverage in this instance?
No, there would not, because it would say that under 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, all those coverages would then go on to apply.
Is it anywhere in the record that such coverage is likely to have cost more in terms of premiums?
Not that I'm aware of, that it would cost more.
Is that the typical case?
Yes, if you're going to insure more, usually you would pay more of a premium.
But in any event, a 1 or a 2 is not there. It's a 7.
1, 2, 3, 4, or 5, or 6 is not there, which would have given...
Say that you were too fast.
Okay.
What numbers?
1 through 6 would have been covered, assuming that Mr. Lisowski would have purchased that type of insurance. In this type of insurance that he chose with his insurer, he had symbol 7, which requires insures only that particular vehicle.
1985 Mack truck.
That's correct.
Counselor, does Hastings provide insurance for the Avenger of any type? And if it's not in the record, just tell me it's not in the record.
It's not in the record, and but...
Don't tell me that. I have a hypothetical. Suppose Jonathan was on the sidewalk, and a car negligently hit him. And the car was underinsured. Car owned by Justice Crooks. Underinsured. Can Jonathan collect under this policy?
He may very well. In this case...
I want to know under what provision of the policy he collects. Justice Crooks wants it clear that he was not driving a truck. Under what provision? Because if you are saying that this third sentence for a covered auto licensed or principally garaged, this endorsement modifies, the autos under this policy are not involved. I just have a pedestrian who's an insured under your policy.
It may.
Well, where? Why don't you argue, if you're consistent, why aren't you arguing
because
that there's no covered auto involved? It has to be a covered auto license or principally garage conducted in garage I've been conducted in Wisconsin. And the auto that's covered under your policy is not involved. And the only thing your policy says, if I understand your argument, is it has to involve the auto that was covered.
In this case, they specifically chose not to insure the particular auto involved.
My question is to whether that my hypothetical is covered under your policy.
Assume that it is. If
where? Where is it covered?
It would be covered through the endorsement, if any.
Where? Why isn't it excluded by the language for it? This endorsement changes the policy. And you're reading the third sentence, for a covered auto licensed or principally garaged or garage operations conducted in Wisconsin, this endorsement modifies insurance provided under the following. Now, I understand your argument. Your argument is this policy on underinsured motorist coverage applies only to the vehicle that they bought insurance for. That vehicle is not involved in this case.
That's only half the argument, though, because
okay. What's the other half?
The other half is that they specifically chose to exclude this. I don't want coverage on this vehicle. That's what they're saying when they look at after-acquired vehicle and they say, I don't want to insure it.
They specifically excluded, under the language for a covered auto, any accident that doesn't involve a covered auto. I mean, the same argument can be made. I don't understand why you aren't arguing that if he's a pedestrian, he's not covered under this policy.
Well, if it was not related to the farming business, you might have, again, you would look to the kind of insurance, and I think that is also...
He was on an errand for the farming business. He was a pedestrian.
Mm-hmm. There may not be coverage. But in this case...
It may not be coverage because it's not for a covered auto licensed in Wisconsin, which this policy is limited to. Does that make any sense?
Sure. Especially when you consider in this case that they have the option to choose this coverage.
Where?
When they bought the
Avenger, how do I get an option to choose I'm a pedestrian? Where does it say even as a pedestrian? Why doesn't it say here we will pay all sums the insured is legally entitled to recover as compensatory damages from the owner or driver of an underinsured motor vehicle? That seems to cover me as a pedestrian.
That's not the facts of our particular case.
I know that.
Okay. Then you might have coverage.
Mr. Fair,
yeah.
It seems to me the court has a difficult choice in interpreting this policy. If we
adopt opposing counsel's point of view that this is not limited, a family member is not limited to being in a covered auto, then there's going to be UIM coverage driving any other auto or being outside an auto. On the other hand, I don't really see how you can argue that if Dennis Lasowski, the owner of the policy, principal insured, is driving a rental car anywhere, he's not going to get UIM coverage, I don't believe. If he's riding in another car, he's not going to get UIM coverage. If he's on the sidewalk and hit by a reckless vehicle that's underinsured, he's not going to get any UIM coverage. It seems to me this is a Hobson's choice here, because there's certainly some justice into opposing counsel's position, but the premium for $500,000 of UIM coverage is $30. If it's going to cover a situation anywhere, it ain't going to be $30 anymore. That's probably true. It's not going to be. It's going to be more than that. And that's why in this case, it's going to be important to look at this particular vehicle that's involved here.
Counsel, are you finished? Counsel, let's take a look at the Mile case. In the Mile case, was the insured occupying a covered vehicle?
No, it was not.
Mm-hmm.
Nor was he trying to seek coverage from a vehicle that he didn't that he rented and didn't pay premium for.
Indeed, would you agree that generally, and there are exceptions, heaven knows there are statutory exceptions, but generally, underinsured motorist coverage is generally personal coverage and not coverage of the car?
Assuming that if there's a proper language in there for a covered automobile, then you follow that pattern.
Well, let me ask
and
the question
that,
again.
After that point, then you look at who the insured is. Correct.
You agree that generally for class one, and by class one, of course, in this endorsement, I mean who is an insured, and insured isn't the named insured in any family members. Throughout the industry, that's considered class one. Here it's A, but it's class one. Do you agree that generally, throughout the industry, that underinsured motorist coverage is considered personal to the person as opposed attaching to the vehicle? Do you agree with that?
They're all in the definitions. We can certainly see that is not necessarily the case.
I'm going to refer to Wisconsin insurance law, Arnie Anderson. Now, of course, I can refer to some national treatises that say that, but let me just, because this is on Wisconsin, cite from him, chapter 4, page 13. Keep in mind that UIM, which is underinsured motorist, as well as UM, uninsured motorist, is personal and portable and follows class 1 insureds. Do you agree or disagree with Anderson in his treatise on Wisconsin Insurance Law, Volume 1?
Yes, but there are additional laws, such as 632.32.5J, which would say you can exclude vehicles not listed in your policy and not...
That's exactly right. You're absolutely right. So generally the law is that with regard to UIM, it's personal. If it's a class 1, not true with class 2, not true with class 3, but class 1. Okay, generally, but Or you can exclude it. Why do you want to exclude it? You want to exclude it because you want to stem the abuses that were being at least inferred or referenced by Justice Prosser. And what's a real easy way to do that? What's just the simplest way to do it? You know, the simplest way to do it is exactly what you said. And that is, take a look at 632.32.5J. You want to exclude certain kinds of UIM coverage? Here's the way you do it. You put on your computer, copy and paste J. You copy and paste J right into that policy, and bingo, bango, bongo, you have limited, those are legal terms for the students, you have limited the general notion that UIM insurance for Class 1, named insureds and family members, is personal. And so here's how you do it. No problem. You put in those provisions. And Jay says, of course, you know, there are prohibited provisions and there are permissible provisions. And this is a permissible provision. Jay, you can put in that policy. Jay says a policy may contain, or rather may provide, that any coverage under the policy does not apply to the loss resulting from the use of a motor vehicle that meets all of the following conditions. 1, 2, 3, I note that 2 is a condition is not described in the policy under which the claim is made. Whew. Now, does J, 1, 2, and 3, does that appear in your endorsement?
It appears in the context of the policy under after acquired vehicles, part B2, where it clearly states that under this policy, you will not receive any coverage for an after acquired vehicle. It's not listed. It's owned by Mr. Lisowski, and it's not has not been reported to the company within 30 days.
Assist me with regard to the endorsement. Assist me where that is, so I can follow. I think it's on page 24.
Or 61 of my appendix.
Oh, good. Page 61 of your appendix. Okay, so where does the 5J language appear on page 61 of your appendix?
Right at the top, Your Honor. It says for covered auto.
Oh,
and then you go back to the
cutting and
covered
pasting.
Auto.
You need this. You need this kind of language. Where does that appear?
That's where it appears. And it refers you back to the policy for covered auto. What is the covered auto? The MAC, number 7.
Okay.
You look at the next page and it says, oh, the Avenger is a newly acquired vehicle. It is clearly not covered. We did not intend to have ownership. We didn't intend to have coverage on this. We didn't even believe we owned it. We believed the son owned it. He believed he owned it.
So
we have no intent to insure this vehicle.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So in order for your argument to prevail, the language for a covered auto has to be read as controlling rather than what your opposing counsel would argue as the substance of the provision here. That is, A, coverage, B, who's an insured.
Under Crandall and Ringer, however you pronounce that case, John, both of those cases determined that language was substantive. And it is substantive. It's in the contract. It's not a heading. It says for a covered auto. We have to give it some kind of meaning under the rules of construction. And that means that you go back to the policy and look at what vehicle you as the insurer chose to cover.
Mm-hmm.
The insurer would have no expectation that this vehicle was covered because they specifically chose not to. They didn't even think they owned it.
Whether the policy in Crandall was issued to an individual or an entity?
It's an individual doing business as Jack Crandall. Auto. That's what it says in paragraph 9 of the case. It was issued to Jack Crandall.
Well, paragraph, I don't know, that's the same paragraph. Crandall says, there's part in Crandall that says it's issued to the business, not an individual. That's what Crandall says. Let me see if that's on paragraph 9 that you're referring to. Sure enough, that's exactly what it says. That this is a policy for Crandall's business, not for him as an individual. So I return to my question. It says here it's not as an individual. The declaration page, and I just don't know the answer to this, I'm asking. The declaration page here is clear in this case that it is to an individual. It says that. It says a form of named insured business. It's a business, but it's individual.
Right. It's
and I'm
an
not sure what the Crandall court means by this.
I don't know that record would be unclear as to whether this was, in all likelihood, it was the same type of thing because the forms are standard.
But we don't.
Jack Crandall, and then down below, it probably had doing business as Crandall Auto Body, just like here it is.
Would it be correct to say you don't know?
Yes, it would be. It would be very correct. And the Crandall policy, the Crandall court doesn't necessarily say that it was issued to a, quote, business or... or for Jack, it clearly was not Jack Crandall's personal auto, and this, it was a business auto, just like this is a farm truck. It's a bean truck. In our case, it's clearly not a personal automobile. He, Mr. Lisowski, Dennis, had his personal autos insured with another company completely, as was the Avenger by Mr. Jonathan Lisowski. Hastings only had a farm vehicle.
Counsel, if I may, I'd like to follow up on a question Justice Prosser had asked a little while ago, and that is concerning the portability of the uninsured motorist coverage. Under the symbols section, the business auto coverage form, the description of the covered auto designation symbols, are there not some provisions for portability under certain circumstances if the insured had bargained for the same?
If he had bargained for the same, in this case, he certainly did not. In fact, they
chose not to coverage. What would those provisions be for portability? Under what circumstance could the insured have bargained for coverage?
Well, you'd if you chose 1 through 6 in the policy, you would probably include this Avenger then in your policy, and it could be portable to that.
What about 8 or 9? Leased, rental, borrowed cars?
Leased, like in Mao. That's correct.
So if he had had an 8 designated there and he had rented a car from one of the rental agencies, that certainly would have been portable then.
Yes.
In the example I gave you about the pedestrian and the other car, if your policy didn't cover, wouldn't it violate 632.32.5J?
If it was just that, perhaps. But in this case,
I know. I'm asking you about my case.
Yeah. If it had, was completely unrelated, there would be no exclusion there. So I'm not sure if it would actually violate the.
Well, it's not. The car was not owned by the named insured, so it wouldn't cover.
Yeah, when it would be like I think the Rainer case where it was just not an insured, or the Lasevich case was not an insured automobile, and so it did not apply.
632.32.5J.
Did not apply.
So the language that the coverage only covers covered autos just is not an absolute prohibition.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Friedman, you are representing counsel for Amicus Curiae, the Wisconsin Insurance Alliance. You are using 5 minutes of Hastings Mutual time.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm James Friedman from Godfrey & Kahn. With me today is my co-counsel, Linda Schmidt. We represent the Wisconsin Insurance Alliance as amicus curiae in this case. I'd like to thank the court for providing us the opportunity to present oral argument, and I'd like to thank Hastings Mutual Insurance Company for providing the Wisconsin Insurance Alliance some of its time to argue. The facts, and particularly the policy language in this case, are undisputed. They are absolutely critical. They are quite clear, and they are, in fact, standard policy language. The policy simply does not provide underinsured motorist coverage, or, for that matter, any coverage for non-covered autos. Now, that starts with the type of policy we have here, a business auto policy like the Crandall case, but most significantly, and it's some language I don't think anyone has focused on the first page of the declarations, right in the middle, all caps, it states, quote, each of these coverages will apply only to those autos shown as covered autos, end quote. And underneath that, it shows which coverages it's referring to. And there it says, underinsured motorist with the symbol 07. So right there on really the first substantive page of the policy, it says these coverages only apply for covered autos. Underinsured motorist is one of those. Now you jump.
So does that mean the pedestrian, my example, is not covered by this policy?
Your Honor, it's not something I gave a great deal of thought to before today, but I don't think it would be covered, and I think it would not be covered because this is a somewhat unique kind of policy. And in fact,
I just said it was standard, Mr. Friedman.
Unique in that it's a business auto policy, and the policy that the seven of you and that I'm used to are personal auto policies, and personal auto policies act differently than business ones. This only applies to a semi-tractor trailer, a single vehicle. It's not intended to apply to a situation where Mr. Lasowski's are standing there on the side of the road. It is when they're in their business, they're operating a specific truck that is used for their business.
Counsel, help me with this. How do you respond to this? Because I too read the language that you referenced in the declaration page. Then I get to the endorsement, and I read the decision of the trial court and Court of Appeals here, and they look at the language of the endorsement, which includes this language at the very top and caps. The endorsement changes the policy. Please read it carefully, and it reiterates that the endorsement changed the policy a little later on that page. And both the trial court and the Court of Appeals in this case and in the Runger case thought that the language for a covered auto when compared with the language dealing with coverage and who's an insured and what are the exclusions, that there was an ambiguity. Were they right or wrong in believing that there's an ambiguity?
I would suggest those courts were correct in their ultimate decision. They were correct in following Crandall, that Crandall was correct. And I don't think the Court of Appeals went so far as to say it is ambiguous. The court said there was some persuasive evidence that went that direction.
Well,
and I would suggest that the evidence is not persuasive. And again,
let me tell you what the Court of Appeals said. The Court of Appeals said, with regard to the two things that I just referenced, that first, for the introductory provision, and of course this is focusing on Crandall, but the same kind of thing. The introductory provision Crandall relied on is plainly inconsistent with the provisions that follow. And they talk about the inconsistency here, and I'm reading paragraph 6. And then they go on to talk about the inconsistency here. Nevertheless, in paragraph 8, they have no choice. I don't believe I am in any way taking the Court of Appeals or the trial court's decision out of context when I say that they found an inconsistency and therefore an ambiguity between the language for a covered auto and the rest of the policy. You know, jump in and say, no, you're wrong, they found it to be consistent.
No, Your Honor, I would in fact disagree with the Court of Appeals in this case to the extent that it stated that the language was inconsistent between the first substantive sentence of the endorsement and later provisions in the endorsement. I note that my limited time is already up. May I briefly address that question at least?
Very briefly.
Well, thank you, Chief Justice. I think it's critical to look at the Mao case and to recognize that Mao, which I have relied on myself, only refers to headings. It does not refer to introductory sentences. It does not refer to preparatory language. It's headings. And I would acknowledge that the heading in this case is not substantive. But with respect to coverage provided by this endorsement, for a covered auto, licensed or principally garage, for a covered auto, that's not a heading. That is critical language. It is the critical language. It ties right back to the language on the deck page that I read earlier. And it's critical because then you look at everything else, and everything makes sense then. You recognize that the named insured provision is simply the mandated language from the legislature in the omnibus statute, 632.32.5b1, I think. Yep, excuse me, 6b1. You have to have that in there, okay? So that's what the legislature said. So for a covered auto, that's how it works. And then the plaintiff would point to exclusions and say, well, the exclusions seem to be redundant. Well, they might be redundant, and in fact, this is an endorsement that was added to the policy. And so the policy says no coverage for this, and then later it says, and the same thing is excluded. Is that belt and suspenders? Yes, it is. But that's the way endorsements work. Sometimes you'll have the same language in the original policy and in the endorsement. Those don't add up to inconsistencies, though, Your Honor. And with that, I will conclude and thank the court again.
Thank you, Mr. Friedman. Mr. Bruden?
We've forgotten the standard, time-honored rule of construction of contra preferendum. This is an adhesion contract. The Lasowskis didn't bargain for anything, Justice Gableman. They paid a premium for the coverage that this insurance company drafted. There's absolutely nothing in the record.
I assume they had a choice whether to sign it or not.
They have a choice to pay a premium. They don't know what the coverage is.
They don't know what the coverage that they're purchasing.
They don't know what the coverage is, Your Honor. The insurance agents have no duty to tell them what the coverage is. So what the coverage is.
A business owner who's looking to insure a semi-truck is not going to be aware of whether the semi-truck is insured or not.
I submit, Your Honor, that, first of all, he's an individual. He's insured as an individual, not a business owner.
So the business auto policy declarations, that has no relevance?
What is relevant is who is the named insured. If the named insured is Crandall Auto Body, then we have two different types of insureds defined under the policy.
Okay.
But if the named insured is an individual, we have three different types.
So the semi-truck was his personal vehicle?
The semi-truck was insured as a covered auto if he was operating it and under a liability section of the policy. It insured that and that only.
Because all the people you pointed to in the spectator gallery, probably 90% drive semi-trucks as their personal vehicle.
I don't think it matters, Your Honor.
Well, you led with that, so that's why I'm asking you about it.
Well, what I led with is this. There's absolutely nothing in the record about how UIM coverages are priced. I have tried for years. That's why there's nothing in the record. There's absolutely no basis upon which to argue that UIM coverage would have been more
It would have cost more if you would have listed 01 through 06 or 08 through 09. There's absolutely nothing in the record. The reason there's nothing in the record is because the $30 that he paid for that premium, just like the $30 you pay for your personal UIM, has nothing to do with the risk to you. It has to do with the overall risk pool of how many people are going to get in an underinsured motor vehicle. How many people are going to be injured by an underinsured motor vehicle. Not how many people are going to occupy this particular Mack truck and get involved in an underinsured motor vehicle collision. Just like Justice Abramson's, it has nothing to do with, if you are a pedestrian. The premium, that the $30 that was paid for this Mack truck, has nothing to do with the risk that that individual is going to get hit as a pedestrian. The premium is not based upon a risk analysis of the Mack truck. It's based upon an overall pool.
Counsel, you state in your brief on page 32 that other states have consistently held that identical introductory language to the UIM endorsement is contextually ambiguous. And you cite, and I recall reading the transcript of the trial court judge who was taken with these, how these other states had interpreted the standard policy language inconsistent with Crandall. And you list a number of other states. Is there a majority and a minority here?
Your Honor, I've not been able to find any case that has decided this decision around the country the way that Crandall is decided. All the other cases that I've found are contrary to Crandall. Now, if we have 5-1, I guess that's a majority. Many states haven't, to my knowledge, had the opportunity to review this. But Ohio, Maryland, Michigan, Nebraska have all held that the introductory language is contextually ambiguous. Under that time-honored rule of contra preferendum, they drafted the policy. They could have easily fixed the policy by simply saying you have to occupy a covered auto. They didn't do that. Let's not forget the test in Dauhauer versus West Bend Mutual. The test is not what the insurer intended, the words to me. We've heard that twice here today. Well, we didn't intend to cover this. The test in Dauhauer is not what the insurer intended the words to mean, but what a reasonable person in the position of an insured would have understood the words to mean.
Counsel, would a reasonable person who didn't think he owned this car believe he had UIM coverage on it?
Who's the reasonable person who didn't think he owned the car? Yet?
That's my understanding, that the father didn't think he owned the car.
That's not true. It's a fact. It's a finding of fact. He was the owner of the car. He owned the car.
Okay, that may be a finding of fact. I'm just giving you a hypothetical based on argument of opposing counsel that he didn't think he owned the car. I don't know what the record looks like, but I'll go back and look at it.
If he didn't think he owned the car, and they can prove that he didn't own the car, regardless of what he thought.
No, that's not my question.
Then there'd be an exclusion, Your Honor.
Okay, that's not my question. My question is, would a reasonable person who did not think he owned the car think he had UIM insurance on it?
Sure, because we don't insure just owners of cars. We insure drivers of cars.
Okay. All right. Counsel, if I may ask, 632.32.4M requires insurers who are writing policies to provide information regarding UIM coverage. And if a premium isn't paid, that coverage is conclusively deemed rejected.
Correct.
How do you reconcile the answer you just gave Justice Rogenstack with that legal provision that says, when you get a policy for a car and you don't buy UIM coverage and you haven't paid a premium, you've rejected it for that car?
That's true.
Okay.
What's inconsistent about that? We paid a premium.
For the Avenger?
No. If we had paid a premium for the Avenger, it would be an exclusion and we wouldn't be here.
Okay.
We paid a premium for underinsured motorist coverage. That's that $30 that we paid for $500,000 worth of coverage. Well, half a million reduced by whatever the torque figure. right, because of the reducing clause. But we paid a premium for our underinsured motorist coverage.
And that came up in the context of Hastings writing the policy and offering the underinsured motorist coverage and then accepting that for that policy and that vehicle.
For whatever that policy states, Your Honor. So if the underinsured motorist policy fails to state that you only have UIM coverage if you're only in the occupied vehicle, whatever they sold us is what we got.
So once the legislature, when they put this provision in there, intended to put everyone on notice, you think, that whenever you insure any car and you are offered underinsured motorist coverage, that that then could cover any car till the end of time?
No. What the legislature did is they eliminated the complete, in my judgment, what they did, is eliminated the complete portability that we used to have before the 1995 amendments. Remember all the stacking cases that you folks used to decide, right? That's the reason for the 1995 amendments, is because, wait a minute, you've got four cars insured over here, and now you're in an accident, and now you want four separate UIM policies, Mr. Brode. And the insured, Mr. Brode, says, that's right, because each of those policies promised to pay. He didn't say, you got to be occupying this. So what the legislature did in 1995, because of the perceived unfairness of stacking, changed the law and said, all right, we're going to provide a specific drive other car provision. And if you list these three things in the statute in your policy, as Justice Bradley indicated, you should just cut and paste them and put them in there. That if you put those in there, we don't have to provide coverage. But that's not what Hastings Mutual did. They didn't follow the dictates of the legislature under 632. They could have. But they want this court to now do something that they didn't do, and that is, please import this occupancy exclusion in this introductory language because we didn't put it in our insuring agreement. We could have under the statute, but we didn't. They want this court to add those words, which the court has indicated should not be done. The test is not what the insurer intended the words to mean, but what a reasonable person in the position of the insured would have understood the words to mean. If a reasonable person like Dennis Lasowski buys underinsured motorist policy, which he did, he's entitled to whatever coverage the carrier provided to him.
Counsel, thank you. This ends the hearing in yet another UIM case. We're delighted to have heard from all of you. 06 AP 2662, Lasowski versus Hastings Mutual Insurance Company. Thank you, Mr. Blue, Mr. Fair, and Mr. Friedman for your arguments today and your briefs on the topic. The court is adjourned for oral arguments in accordance with the October calendar. The court will meet in the conference room so that we may discuss other matters and then decide on the proceedings for the rest of the afternoon. We are adjourned. Oh, 20 of 12, please.